is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Oh, so much in the news. I just want to go through a whole bunch of stuff with you that some of it is fascinating, some of it is astonishing, some of it is horrifying, some of it's actually inspiring. And then we'll toss the phone lines open and get your thoughts on all these various things. To start out with, Governor Chris Christie says he's going to be a bold Republican. Right. You know about the Bold Progressives, right? Boldprogressives.org, I think it is. The Progressive Campaign Change Committee, PCCC. This is on the left, and they're saying, hey, go big, right? Go substantial. In fact, according to the PCCC, 70% of Americans support increasing Social Security benefits. That includes 62% of Republicans, 83% of Democrats, 63% of independents support increasing Social Security benefits, expanding Social Security benefits, and pay for that increase by having the wealthy pay the same rate into Social Security as everyone else. In other words, how do you pay for this? Well, you know, right now, if you make more than $118,000 a year, you don't pay any Social Security taxes. So we're just saying, hey, let's go with Steve Forbes' flat tax. Let the Koch brothers pay the same amount in Social Security taxes that the kid working at McDonald's does. Because even though the kid working at McDonald's, or the young man or the young woman, or the old man or old woman for that matter, it's no longer a kid's job, but you get my point. The person working at McDonald's, even though they're making so little money, even though they live in poverty and they're eligible for food stamps and therefore are not paying federal income taxes, they are paying Social Security taxes. But anybody who makes over $118,000 in this country is not. Something bizarre about that, right? So here we are, 70% of Americans, fully 70%, 85% of Democrats, 62% of Republicans think we should have rich people pay the same into Social Security as everybody else, the same percentage of their income. And the same percentage of people, actually slightly different, that was 85% of Democrats are in favor of that. 83% of Democrats are in favor of expanding Social Security benefits. 62% of Republicans. Okay, so what does Chris Christie come out with? Da-da-da! He wants to cut Social Security benefits to any seniors who make more than 80 grand a year, eliminate Social Security benefits for any seniors making over 200 grand a year. This is a very, very, very small group of people. But the purpose for doing this has nothing to do with saving Social Security money, because it won't. Taking away the Koch brothers' Social Security benefits is not going to add anything to the lifespan of Social Security. But what it does is it turns Social Security from what's called an entitlement program. In other words, every American is entitled to it. Every American participates with it. It turns it from an entitlement program into a welfare program because it's means tested. This has been one of the goals of the Republicans since 1935. Okay, so that's his first step. Secondly, he wants to raise the national retirement age from 67 to 69. I'll bet you thought it was 65. No, I'm sorry. Reagan raised it to 67. It just took 35 years to kick in. It's kicking in right now. I'm not eligible for full Social Security benefits until I'm 67. Right. And Chris Christie wants to make it 69. Yeah, that 69-year-old bricklayer. He's looking pretty good, huh? How about that janitor? He's 67 years old, but he can still push that broom. Come on, what happened to the dignity of work? I mean, I have no problem if people want to work beyond retirement age. I intend to work until I die. As George Bernard Shaw said, when I die, I want to be all used up. But there are a lot of people who work really hard. I mean, I'm not laying bricks. I'm just sitting here talking. This job does not tear apart my body. And frankly, I think it keeps my mind fairly functional. But most people aren't talk show hosts or governors of New Jersey. And by the time they reach 69, they're ready to retire. By the time they reach 65, hell, by the time they reach 60, which is the retirement age in most of Europe. Or 63 in some cases. I think France raised it a few years back. So Chris Christie says, Washington is afraid to have an honest conversation about Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. I am not. He also says that the qualifying age for Medicare, that is currently 65 should be raised to 67. Oh, that's going to get him elected, right? Is this guy nuts? Okay, step one. Step two, I want to talk about race in America. I was on Karen Hunter's show on Sirius yesterday, on Sirius XM, and we had, I'm hoping to get Karen on this program so we can kind of reprise that conversation. We're talking about it in email right now. But we had a really, Karen Hunter's an African-American woman who has a program on Sirius XM. And just an absolutely great program. And we had this conversation about race and the difficulty that white people and black people have talking about race and why and where that came from and who has black friends and who has white friends and all kinds of, it was fascinating. And I think increasingly there's not a woman in America, I'm guessing, who doesn't understand what male privilege is. And I doubt that there's very many people of color in this country who don't understand what white privilege is. But white males tend not to understand either. I'm guessing probably 50, 60% of white males understand, maybe 30, 40% of white males understand what male privilege is. I'm guessing 5% understand what white privilege is. And apropos of that, there was this this redneck, as they say, and I've got the article here with his name on it. I've lost it. I'll find it while we're playing this. And Jim, I think you've got a picture of this guy. He put this up on YouTube, and this is just a good old boy from the South, right? This thing is going viral because he's saying, "Hey, white people, wake up!" Here it is.
This country was built for white people, and it's time us Americans, us white Americans, came to terms with that and realized we're benefiting from that. We created slavery. We created a culture and a system of white supremacy that has benefited us for 400 years.
There you go.
And maybe it's about time we stop being lazy as white people and take some responsibility.
Yeah, maybe it's time we stop being lazy as white people and take some blanking responsibility. I think I'm still trying to track down this guy's name. I'll be back to you with it. And I thought it was White was his name, but anyhow, here's another clip from him. Here's what he's talking about. Talking to white people.
There's a new South, new America. It's called white racial responsibility. And it's time we all took some, y'all. So let's take a little bit of white race responsibility. Let's start by standing up against it. Let's recognize that in every American institution, education, financial, health care, justice, for God's sake, it's injustice. In the police departments, in our police officers, many of them.
There you go. And his name is Dixon White, right? Dixon White. Good guy. Here's another clip, again, Dixon White, Southern redneck, talking, his description of himself, talking to white people.
Imagine the privileges that you have just because of your skin. I ain't saying you ain't suffered. We all suffer. Stop being defensive. What I'm saying is that we get certain privileges. We're not harassed by the police. Okay? We're not denied a house loan or denied to live in a neighborhood. We're not uncomfortable living in rural America. I'm not uncomfortable living in rural America, but I tell you what, a lot of black people don't even want to drive through where I live. Why? Racist. We're racist. So I'm not saying white people are bad. Stop being defensive. I'm saying take some responsibility.
Take some responsibility.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Now, Bill O'Reilly pushes back. We'll come up with that, not specifically to Dixon White, but in general to the idea. We'll be with that right after this. Welcome back, 15 minutes past the hour. And David in Collinsville, Texas. Hey, David, it says here you want to disagree with me. What's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Yeah, you said that people that are making over $118,000 a year do not pay Social Security. They do pay Social Security. They do not pay it on the amount over $118,000, but up to $118,000, they do pay Social Security.
You're right. You're right. But do you get my point?
Well, but in your statement, you said they don't pay Social Security.
Okay. All right. But thank you for the correction, David. I'll be more careful.
Okay.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Ron in Yoder, Indiana. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Hi. I'd just like to talk about the Teamsters Pension Fund right now. I just got a letter just yesterday telling me that they need rescued.
Hmm.
And I don't see how. I don't know why, other than the fact that the Teamsters Pension Fund was so divested in the stock market, and when it took a turn, it lost all our money.
Yeah, the Bush crash hurt pension funds all across the country. But then there, you know, the other problem that the Teamsters have, my guess would be, I have no direct personal knowledge of this, and I haven't had a conversation with James Hoffa about it, but my guess would be that the Teamsters pension fund is suffering the same problem that many of the union pension funds are, and that is that when they were organized and the actuarial tables that they operate on, the economic assumptions that they operate on, assume a return on their investments, which, you know, they've had since 2009, but whether it's, you know, made up for what happened in 2006, 7, and 8, who knows, number one. And number two, those formulas that they use to calculate, you know, future funds for the pension fund don't always assume that the Republicans are going to succeed in getting the right to work for less passed in various states that's going to cut the union membership substantially, and so there's less money coming into the pension fund.
The Republicans have been doing this to us all along.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Ever since 1981 when Reagan busted PATCO.
Start voting.
Yeah. 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 People absolutely need to wake up and start voting. And I'm totally with you. Ron, thanks for the call. Cliff in Canyon Country, California. Hey, Cliff, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Since you moved to Washington, have you been to Monticello yet?
Yeah, I have, actually. Louise and I went there last summer.
Cool. Very good. Listen, Tom, I'm opposed to fracking. I know you are, too.
Yep.
I've been calling Governor Brown's office, encouraging him to follow Governor Cuomo's lead and ban fracking in California, especially with this drought we have. But he's exempting fracking business from water rationing, you know. So,
right.
Anyways, it gets to my point about when this was from a an article of September, October issue of Mother Jones,
mm-hmm.
the one with the orange cover with a big gun on it. And it's the article was called The Chevron Communiques, and it details these secret cables showing how Hillary's State Department was...
you mean Obama's State Department? Cliff,
yeah, but
you know, I if people want to call in and bash Hillary Clinton, I got no problem with it. There's a long list of things that I would agree with you that are complaints about Hillary Clinton. But in the future, if you're going to call with a complaint about her, also, I mean, she was Secretary of State for a long time. She did a hell of a lot of really great stuff. Have at least one compliment, too. Huh? Let's balance the argument. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, so we played three of those four clips, right? Okay, the Dixon White, rural redneck, according to himself, saying to white people, hey, y'all, wake up. And here's clip number four of Mr. White, what he had to say.
So I'm just saying, white America, wake up. Look in the racial mirror and look at what we have done. Look at how we benefit. And let's do something about it. Let's speak up. Let's vote. Let's create legislation and policies to fight against this. Let's make things fair and equal. Let's take some responsibility and never, ever, ever ignore any form of racism that you see or experience or witness. Always speak up and act up.
A white guy who gets white privilege, or at least seems to get white privilege. So, Bill O'Reilly's take on all this? Here you go.
The jihadists are threatening millions of people. Iran's close to having a nuclear weapon. Working Americans are still struggling to make money in the marketplace, and our traditional American values are under siege nearly everywhere. If you're a Christian or a white man in the USA, it's open season on you.
Right. You white guys, you're the victims. This is the official message of the Republican Party. It has been since the Nixon era. White guys, especially white men, are the victims. They're the victims of women who want to be in the workplace. They're the victims of the of what Limbaugh calls the feminazis, of women who want equal rights, of women who don't want to be harassed when they walk down the street, of women who don't want to be raped when they go to college. White men are the victims of those people, and they are the victims of, and the argument that has been made over most of the last two centuries is, black people going to take your job? Are they going to move into your neighborhood? I mean, and Bill O'Reilly, again, you know, putting out that old trope that, oh, yeah, white people are the victims of that. Those black people are going to take our jobs. They're going to, you know, on and on. This is a sales pitch. You'll remember, I keep pointing out, the Republican Party is made up of three groups. There are the rich people, the genuinely rich people. Bill O'Reilly's rich. He's worth tens of millions of dollars. He's not really rich, though. I mean, he's not David Koch rich. He's not Bill Gates rich. He's not Shelley Adelson rich. He's not Tom Steyer rich. He's just wealthy. So you've got the rich people, the genuinely rich people who really control the Republican Party. And many of them aren't even human beings. They're big corporations, the ExxonMobils of the world, the Chevrons of the world, the J.P. Morgan Chase of the world, etc. So you got the rich people and their companies. And they all reasonably should vote Republican because that's what the Republican Party does, is it looks out for their interests. That's its exclusive reason for existence. It's why they will. It's why the Republican Party will even deny science. Oh yeah, there's no global warming. Those oil billionaires like the Koch brothers, they are not harming the planet. Leave those poor boys alone. Right. This is so you've got rich people, and then you've got the well-paid shills for the rich people. I'd put Bill O'Reilly into that category. And the job of the well-paid shills for the rich people is to bring along the suckers to vote for Republicans who will make sure that the rich people get richer and that their companies are more profitable, even if it means ruining the environment, even if it means killing people as a consequence of cancers and asthmas and things, even if it means, you know, ruining our communities, even if it means destroying the quality of life in the United States, even if it means that bricklayers get to retire at 70 instead of 65, well, now 67, on and on it goes, right? So this is Bill O'Reilly reaching out to the suckers, in this case, the suckers being the white racists. Can you cue to just like the last 10 seconds of that O'Reilly piece? Yeah. And it's just this is the sales pitch. This is the pitch that the shill class in the Republican Party is promoting to the sucker class in the Republican Party. And of course, most of that promotion happens three ways. It happens either A, on Fox so-called news, B, on hate radio, right-wing hate radio all across the United States, or C, in social media, on right-wing websites, Facebook, and in email, in viral emails, which are often so wrong, so deceptive, so filled with lies. I'm going to get to one of those in a minute also. But this is a naked shill outreach for the suckers, to bring in the white racist suckers. Here he is again.
If you're a Christian or a white man in the USA, it's open season on you.
There you go. See? Hey, you're the victim. Come on, suckers. Vote for the Republicans, because we'll protect you from those evil black people. And those brown people. Oh, my God, they're coming across the border. They want your jobs, too. You want jobs to come back to the United States? Forget about brown people and black people. Change our trade policies. Bring our factories back. Bernie Sanders points out we've lost 60,000 factories just since 2000, in large part because of George W. Bush's trade policies and Ronald Reagan's trade policies and, frankly, even Bill Clinton's trade policies. And this is one of the areas where I really hope I see a change in between the Hillary Clinton candidacy and the Bill Clinton presidency. Because Bill Clinton and George Herbert Walker Bush stood up there with Ross Perot, and Ross Perot is right. Free trade is stupid. Well, at least it was stupid the way that we were planning on doing it. It worked out very well for the Chinese, thank you very much, and the Japanese and the South Koreans and the Taiwanese and the Vietnamese and the Colombians. But, you know, it's been a disaster for us. So anyhow, that's going on. A report has just come out showing that our invasion of Iraq left 1 million Iraqis dead. 1 million. That's 5% of the entire population of the country. Can you imagine? Think of 20 people that you know. Most of us know in our circle of friends and people, acquaintances, whatnot, at least 20 people. If one out of every 20 people you know was dead as a result of an invasion from, let's say, Canada or Mexico, do you think you might be a little PO'd at Canada or Mexico? Or if China or Russia or, you know, whatever, Saudi Arabia had come over and killed 5% of the American population? We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
In fact, the authors of the report said that the real numbers reach genocidal dimensions. When are we going to prosecute Bush and Cheney? Welcome back. 28 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Over the last year or so, on a half a dozen occasions or thereabouts, I have shared with you on the air emails that I've gotten and from correspondence that I've been having with one of our listeners in Tunisia. His name is Kamal Benyounes. I'm sure I'm mispronouncing it, but it's Benyounes. And he's shared some really, really insightful thoughts with us that I've shared with you on the air. And we've had some interesting conversations about, you know, what's going on in the Middle East and what's just the whole thing. And Kamal, by the way, is totally blind. And he and his family is, I believe, his wife and son and daughter, from looking at the picture, are trying to get the hell out of town. They're trying to get back to the United States, and they're trying to get out of Tunisia. That's all I know about it. They're trying to get out of Tunisia. And he wrote, and he's got a YouFundMe page up. And I just went over and made a small donation. And I, you know, just this guy's a friend of the show. He says, I'm reaching out to support my family. My name is Kamal Benyounes, and I currently live in Tunisia. Here, there are extremely limited opportunities for my employment, and finances are limited. My family has fallen on hard times. My son is in need of a treatment for a medical condition, and we are entrenched in significant debt, leaving it difficult for my wife and I to care for our two kids. I'm worried about the health and quality of life of both my family and myself. As a diabetic, I have to consider my own life, my own health, and the availability of possibly life-saving resources. I'm looking to give my children the best chance in life, but we feel stuck, and we're seeking out any and every option for a more stable life for all of us. Please help out if you can. Donate or just spread the word. And he's got a YouTube page, and it's a GoFundMe page, excuse me, and it's GoFundMe.com/Benyounes Family, Benyounes Family. So it's fairly easy to remember. We will tweet that out, and we will put that in our newsletter and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, you get these emails from people going, I'm stuck in Spain, and I need $100, and it's a scam, right? This is not a scam. This is not a scam. Radio host Pete Santilli. Remember yesterday I said which is worse, racism or misogyny, the hatred of women or the hatred of people of color? And I said, I suspect that what we're going to find, particularly if we end up with a female president, which I think is possible, maybe even likely, that misogyny is actually worse than racism. Evidence. I introduce this as evidence. This is over Paige Lavender writing over at the Huffington Post. Radio host Pete Santilli made shocking remarks about former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. He hosts a radio show. Here's what he said. Quote, Hillary Clinton needs to be convicted. She needs to be tried, convicted, and shot in the vagina. I want to pull the trigger. He also slammed Clinton over what he called, quote, the fake hunt down of this Osama bin Laden thing. He said, I want to shoot her right in the vagina, and I don't want her to die right away. I want her to feel the pain, and I want to look in her eyes, and I want to say on behalf of all Americans that you've killed, on behalf of the Navy SEALs. See, these guys are crazy. I mean, he believes that the assassination of bin Laden never actually happened, and that the SEAL team that went to try to do it died. that it was a failed operation. Now, this is part of the Obama derangement syndrome. Do not give Obama any credit for any accomplishments. Oh, he says he killed bin Laden. No, he didn't. Where's the body? All right. Okay, back to this guy. And of course, the Secretary of State at the time that bin Laden was executed, was found and killed, was Hillary Clinton. So he says, quote, I want to shoot her right in the vagina, and I don't want her to die right away. I want her to feel the pain, and I want to look in her eyes, and I want to say, on behalf of all Americans that you've killed, on behalf of the Navy SEALs, the families of Navy SEAL Team 6 who were involved in the fake hunt down of this Obama bin Laden thing, that whole fake scenario, he used the word Obama, not, it wasn't a typo on my part, SIC you'd put there, that whole fake scenario, because these Navy SEALs know the truth. They killed them all. On behalf of all those people, I'm supporting our troops by saying we need to try, convict, and shoot Hillary Clinton in the vagina. And then he goes on to say Barack Obama needs to be tried, convicted, and shot for crimes against the United States. And if anybody has a problem with that, then you are an enemy of our state. Right. Says the talk show host who at the end of the last hour called for the prosecution of George W. Bush for murder for the Iraq War. But I think that I'm not calling for George W. Bush's penis to be shot, and I'm also arguing for a legal process for what is demonstrably a crime. I mean, the world knows that what George W. Bush did was a crime. Paul Krugman makes a couple of more news things here, and then I'll pick up your calls. My apologies for just going on and off, but Paul Krugman says, he's talking about the differences between the Republican and the Democratic Party. And anybody who calls and says, you know, I wouldn't vote for Hillary because, and fill in the blank, you have not looked at the Republican Party recently. Paul Krugman says the differences between the parties are so clear and so dramatic that it's hard to see how anyone who's been paying attention could be undecided even now, or could be induced to change his or her mind between now and the election. Well, Paul, you're an optimist. You're not taking into consideration what $1 billion or $2 billion worth of negative advertising can do. And finally, the FCC has declared net neutrality. Congress is trying to reverse that. The Congressional Review Act allows Congress to review actions taken by cabinet agencies like the FCC. Actually, I don't know if it's a cabinet agency, but executive branch agencies like the FCC. It allows them to review them and invalidate them. So the Republicans in Congress, acting on behalf of the big telecom companies, this is a story you will not hear on NBC or any of its affiliates owned by Comcast, but the big cable companies want to destroy net neutrality because they want to have a tiered internet. They want to be able to charge more for, you know, the greater variety of things you want to see on the internet, the more you have to pay, just like on cable television. And who's doing this? Representative Collins, Doug Collins. He's a Republican, and he has proposed legislation to overturn the FCC's net neutrality rules. You may want to call your member of the House of Representatives, this is where this is starting, and say, and if Doug Collins represents you, I'm not sure what state he's from. I have this email from the Free Press Action Fund, and they neglected to put, you know, R, West Virginia, or whatever it is. I don't know where he's from. But you may want to call your member of Congress and say, what? 202-225-3121 is the number for the congressional switchboard. He's from Georgia. Thank you. Thank you, Shane. Shane looked him up. Paul in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
Morning, Tom.
Hey, Paul.
I want to talk about Social Security.
Okay.
That was what you started with. You know, despite what the previous caller said, that I think we understood what you meant about the cap.
Yeah. Just to be clear, you pay Social Security taxes on every penny you earn from literally your first dollar until your 114 or 118,000th dollar, and then after that you pay no Social Security taxes whatsoever, just for clarity.
118,000 in 2015.
Yeah.
But the ultra wealthy who make most of their income, all of their income in fact, are not on earned income. So none of that is taxed.
Right. So if you make your living the way that Mitt Romney makes his living, or the way that a lot of Wall Street bankers make their living with what's called pass-through income or dividend income, or what's the word for that you know, that allows them to declare income taken off stocks as capital gains, even though it's not capital.
Interest forward.
Yeah, interest forward, whatever. None of those folks, if you make your money that way, which is how a lot of the real genuine billionaires in this country make their living, then you're probably paying, you may be paying absolutely nothing in Social Security taxes. You're right.
Right. And the history of these types of people are that they probably pay some FICA taxes when they were executives or administrators of some type, when they were making $300,000, $400,000 a year. Then they moved into investment income and now no longer pay it, but they will collect it.
That's correct.
Okay, so but my point is this: if you tax, first of all, take off the cap so that all earned income is subject to FICA tax, and so is all income, anything that we can consider income. And if we did that, number one, we could probably lower the rate because we're taxing more money, and which is what Republicans always say they want. They want lower rates. We could lower the rate. And then the other thing is it would have a built-in means test, because in order to collect Social Security, you have to retire, which means you're no longer earning your billions or millions on your investment income. So which do you want? Do you want your Social Security payments and forego being in your – see, now the ultra-wealthy, they can still collect Social Security and still make millions of dollars in the investments.
Right, although
– they're not really retired.
Right. Exactly.
See, so it would have a built-in means testing. If they didn't want to just live on Social Security, like millions of Americans, regular people do, along with whatever they have saved, and perhaps a company retirement, then fine. But I think most of them would choose to continue to make their income, have their income on dividends, and sit around the pool sipping margaritas.
Yeah. I just, you know, the whole idea of means testing Social Security anyway, however it's done, just scares the hell out of me. Just scares the hell out of me, because it flips it into a welfare program, and we all know what happens to welfare programs, even under Democrats, like what Bill Clinton did. Paul, thank you for the call. Excellent. Great to hear from you. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Marco Rubio ranting about Cuba. I think he's running for president for 2020. Right? This is what we're talking about.
True.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And let's see. Willie in Seattle watching Free Speech TV on public television. Hey, Willie, what's up?
Yes, I'm calling about Social Security.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they want to tax it, but I'm on...
Oh, no, they've been taxing it since Reagan. Reagan put income taxes on Social Security in 83.
Well, I want to talk about, I live in Seattle, Washington, and we have people here on Social Security, which don't get very much money,
right.
And we give to food banks, and we give to other places, and we also have stores here, like Whole Foods, PCC, Safeway, Fred Meyer's. They give tons of organic food to us poor people. And I think if the churches and the people keep giving, we can counteract maybe these Republicans, because we have enough people with money that can help, and they should help, because we're all in the same boat.
Here's the problem, Willie. Last year, the Republicans cut more than $5 billion out of food stamp programs and you know, that kind of aid for poor people in the United States. The total amount of food given away in the United States last year by food banks, churches, and you know, all organized nonprofits that report this kind of activity was in the neighborhood of $5 billion. So the total amount that the private sector gives away was that an amount equal to that was wiped out of what the public sector supports as well. So, you know, it ain't going to happen. It's not possible. There's not enough money. There's not enough private sources of food on the one hand to meet the needs of roughly, you know, 30-40% of the American public has been thrown into poverty as a consequence of 35 years of Reaganomics, Willie.
Well, all I know here in Washington State, people are giving big and they're helping, and we have closed banks. So I don't know what they're giving in other states, but in this state, we can survive on what they're giving us, and they do give us a lot. So I don't know what's going on anywhere else.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Willie, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. And Judy on Free Speech TV in Mohawk, New York. Hey, Judy, Social Security?
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
Hi, good. We have just a minute, Judy.
Okay, well, I'm getting kind of scared. I'll be eligible for Social Security in a little over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And have you heard anything more about any new legislation that these repugnant cons want to try and pass as far as cutting benefits?
Well, they've already done that in the House of Representatives by setting up the structural mechanism so that roughly a year from now, as we're heading into the November elections, the Social Security Disability Fund will be depleted. And it's going to, you know, typically it takes a small act of Congress to move money out of the retirement fund into the disability fund to balance those two funds because they go back and forth and back and forth. And the Republicans have already passed a rule saying that they cannot do that. So there will be a crisis. And we're looking at a 19% cut in income for people on Social Security disability a year from now, roughly. And whether the Republicans are going to follow through on that or whether they're just setting up an election year battle so that they can somehow win by trashing people on Social Security, I don't know what their plan is, but it's sick and twisted, whatever it is. But that's all I know of no specific legislation other than the Republican budget, which would cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and everything else. But, you know, there's no chance that the Republican budget is going to make it past Barack Obama. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Fair and only slightly unbalanced as we help you win the water cooler wars. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Carl, you wanted to talk about the redneck fellow with his video?
Yeah, Tom. You know, I've noticed you've had quite a few calls since I've been on hold since you showed that video. And mm-hmm. So, you know, what the hell? I'll take a bite at that apple that you
okay.
put out there.
Go for it.
If nobody else wanted to.
Yeah.
It's a very revealing video. I would say one of the most nakedly revealed videos that I've seen in a long time. And I've noticed that if you, in conversation with white people, if you go back to slavery, then they kind of shut down. And one of the arguments has always been used, well, I didn't have any slaves and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So what I tend to do is I use the analogy of right after World War II, when I think that one of the greatest economic booms in the world's history was right after that. That was because a lot of the soldiers came back who had young families, were able to get in on low interest loans for housing and education,
right.
educated themselves and educated them their children. And education is the key.
At the GI Bill.
For financial longevity for your family, an educated family tends to be more financially stable family. You educate your children, then they'll go on to college and they'll marry people in college and they'll have houses and own a house and they will pass it on to their children. Here it is, and 60 years later, a lot of white people will not admit that, guess what? A lot of black GIs didn't get that.
That's right. Well, not only that, there were black GIs who were forbidden by law from using GI Bill benefits because of where they lived or wanted to live, particularly with regard to
Absolutely.
Mortgages, the redlining.
It was illegal in some places for them to be in the areas designated.
You're right. Jimmy Carter outlawed that, you know. I mean, that's how long it took.
And this wasn't that long ago. I mean, this
right.
was, my grandfather, you know, that came back from World War II didn't have these privileges that white men.
That my father did have.
That, exactly. Yeah. And so for people like Bill O'Reilly, especially of his age, to act like he's oblivious to what's going on and what went on just in the past 50 or 60 years, that's criminal. And like you said, he's the shield for the rich people to pass it on to the suckers.
Yeah.
And people like him are shielding very well to make their suckers feel that they're the ones that's under attack all these years. And there's no such thing as white privilege in America. That's just it's just garbage. It really is. And unfortunately, a lot of people fall for it. They get a lot of votes by it, and it has worked.
So you're saying the idea that there's no such thing as white privilege is garbage.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The idea that white people hadn't privileged for 400 years in this country just by being white and they haven't got privilege from that is laughable.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah, you're right. Bill O'Reilly continues to demonstrate either that he's a really good shill for the really rich people who want to keep the white people all inflamed, or he's just like one of the dumbest guys on television. And I doubt he's a dumb guy, although, you know, going on the air and saying, hey, I met Al Sharpton in a restaurant up in Harlem, and, you know, it was all full of black people, and they were actually using knives and forks. I mean, you know, that betrays a level of stupidity that's astonishing, too. And Bill O'Reilly actually said some words to that effect. You know, I mean, it's amazing, Carl. It's amazing. Carl, thanks
really
a lot for the call. You nailed it. Thank you. Chris in Las Vegas. Hey, Chris, you wanted to talk about the redneck video?
Yeah, I just had a quick question before I ask the question. I'm actually working a booth tomorrow at the National Association of Broadcasters. Do you know WID or anybody is going to have a presence there tomorrow, to the best of your knowledge?
No idea.
For their progressive programming?
WID is owned and run by Ron Hartenbaum, who's our agent. And, you know, they basically is our agent. I don't know what they're up to. I'm not going to be at NAB. I've never been to NAB. I mean, it's really more the business side of it. It's really more for radio stations as opposed to talent.
Yeah.
So
I kind of figured, because I know I'm actually originally from Oregon. I know Gordon Smith, you know, the old crank that used to, I think Jeff Merkley defeated him back in the late. I think he heads it up. So anyway, my question though was, you know, I think there's a certain element of like, I know that you were playing that redneck guy, and I'm, you know, convinced that you disagree with him. But on a certain level, it's like, you know, you used to always say, occasionally you'll get these gems, you know, like Paul Weyrich and Dugu or Alan Greenspan coming out and be like, yeah, we want to tighten up the labor market. So as, you know, the poor people, you know, can't ask for raises. And then you got this redneck that lays it out. On a certain level, I really believe that these guys believe what they say, and there's a certain amount of like almost like earnesty with these folks, as opposed to Paul Ryan, who does the dog whistle thing. He's such a coward. But you have these right wingers that occasionally come out and, you know, speak on behalf of what all the other right wingers are talking about. Don't you think that there's a certain amount of like character that it takes to believe something that crazy, but have the courage to just come out and lay it on out?
Well, you may have misunderstood the redneck here. He was saying white people quit being racist. White people realize that you're the recipients of white privilege. White people, you know, don't put up with racism anymore. I mean, that was essentially his message, with which I agree. And, you know, the rest of your, I think I've missed the rest of your question, or maybe rendered it irrelevant. How are we doing in time, Shane? 30 seconds. Okay. 30 seconds isn't fair to a caller, so we'll pick that up next time around. But, you know, a couple of questions here, and I think consequential ones. By the way, Marco Rubio just announced that he's running. We'll see where that goes. B, have you called Congressman Doug Collins and let it be the number for Congress, 202-225-3121, and said, please don't destroy net neutrality or your members of Congress? What do we do about a million dead Iraqis based on a lie told by Doug Feith and Alberto Gonzalez and Dick Cheney and George W. Bush and John Yoo and Jay Bybee and Condoleezza Rice? What do you do about it?
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. On the line with us is John W. Whitehead, a constitutional attorney and president of the Rutherford Institute, author of the new book, Battlefield America, The War on the American People. Rutherford is Rutherford.org, a conservative think tank. John, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So our government is waging war on us. Are you not concerned also about the corporations that are waging war on us?
Oh, yeah, the corporations behind it. I mean, as that recent Princeton study showed, the country's been run by an oligarchy, sure. You know, who's funding all the militarized equipment? People have argued that it's just giveaway equipment from Afghanistan. If you do your research, sir, you'll find out that at least 40% of that equipment is new,
yep,
produced by the corporation. So the country's run by the corporate elite, and they're using the police as mercenaries.
So, and I don't disagree with that. And this was set up in large part, starting in 1976 with the Buckley versus Vallejo decision, by the Supreme Court saying that money is protected by the First Amendment. The ability to buy a politician is protected by the First Amendment. So we have all these large corporations that are buying our politicians. How do we get a democracy back that's responsive to we the people rather than just the corporate elite and the billionaire class?
Well, how I argue in my book, okay, Battlefield America, is that, and I spend the last section of the book, my hero is Martin Luther King. Before he died, he wrote a tremendous essay that came out after he died, or after he was shot and murdered. He argued for militant nonviolent resistance. He was going to take over Washington with a thing called Resurrection City, bring people in, very organized. They were going to, he said, the government no longer listens to us. So what I'm telling people is get active on the local level, especially when you see these crazy SWAT team raids where they're going through people's doors, shooting unarmed citizens, those kind of things. Pass a resolution by your town prohibiting that unless it's approved by a civil liberties committee set up by the citizens. So there are many things we can do, but we're going to have to get involved. The average American watches about 150 hours of television a month. What I'm telling people is give 80 hours of that for freedom and get active on the local level. I think you have much less impact. In fact, that Princeton study shows, you may be familiar with it, it says really clearly that the average voter on the national level has very little impact. But yeah, on the local level, with a, I tell you this, I've seen people, 10 people with picket signs change the law in a local community.
Yep.
And getting active and following the principles of Martin Luther King, it does work.
So yeah, the central focus of the concern of your book is government overreach.
Overreach, overcriminalization. I mean, there's a guy in Texas now spending 17 days in jail because his grass was too high. We're involved in cases where people have a single chicken in their backyard for eggs. Well, you know, the large corporate entities that run the supermarkets, they help pass laws against that.
Right.
We had a case in Norfolk, Virginia, where the police arrived and actually took the chicken in custody and went off with it. We're seeing all those kind of cases.
Well, sometimes that's zoning. I mean, don't you think that people
zoning,
in a local community should have the right to
defend national groups that are connected to corporations that are passing those laws, that they want to make sure that you can't collect rainwater on your property now? There's a guy now serving jail time for that.
Yeah.
So what's happened is we've lost control of our local communities. And what I'm telling people, get this, you better get it back soon because of, you know, it's happening in the schools too. We have a case right now where a 4-year-old in preschool is throwing a little fit. Police arrived, put him in handcuffs and shackles, took him to the police station and put him in an isolation room. His mother was only 5 minutes away. They didn't even talk to her. Again, you can change that. Get down to your local school board. They shouldn't be handcuffing kids or tasering kids in public schools now, middle school students. So,
yeah, the good news in all of this is that you can change it. And the things that you're talking about are principally local issues. And,
yeah,
and I don't disagree with the local hypermilitarization of the police, the turning them into warriors, essentially moving them, transforming them from serve and protect to occupy and control, I guess, has been the mode. But what about things like, in May of 2014, last year, there was two chlorine dioxide chemical leaks. This is very, very poisonous stuff from a Coke-owned facility, cellulose facility in Taylor County, Florida. You had ongoing releases of benzene and other chemicals from Coke's oil refinery in Corpus Christi. This is cancer-causing stuff. Hundreds of thousands of pounds of toxic chemical contamination from Coke-owned Georgia-Pacific facility in Crossett, Arkansas, is reported in 2011. In 2000, the EPA fined Coke Industries $30 million for 300 oil spills that resulted in more than 3 million gallons of crude. I mean, isn't there a point at which we say, okay, on the one hand, we don't want an intrusive, militarized government snooping on us. But on the other hand, you've got big corporations out there that have so much power. They own so many politicians. They have so many lawyers. You try and take them on, they crush you like a bug. Their power, with the single exception of the legal power to incarcerate or kill you, which is held by the government, their power is virtually limitless, and the extent to which they control the government, they could probably even exercise that kind of government power. How, if you want to diminish the size and power of government, what else is there that can protect us from the billionaire class and predatory corporations that are despoiling our planet and our communities?
Well, you're right. They're despoiling the communities. The environmental concerns are very important. We shouldn't allow that. But what I've seen, I'm a 40 years civil liberties lawyer. The thing that I've seen that changed things most is people getting active. I love the Occupy movement in 2011. They beat the holy poop out of them. They put them down. I wish that would come back. We need to revive those kind of. We need to get the young people involved. But I think Martin Luther King was right. He said that it's time to march on Washington. Get together, local communities, but it's going to have to start here and there and here and there and here and there.
So you don't want to talk about corporate power?
Do what?
I'm asking what do we do about corporate power in the United States? I'm much more concerned about the fact that when I was a kid, every downtown and every local mall was nothing but local businesses, and now they're nothing but giant corporations.
Read the book, because I have a whole section on Mussolini and Hitler.
Yeah.
What Mussolini, he coined the term corporatism. He was praised by the New York Times. He was praised at the time, a financial genius. Winston Churchill praised him. Yep. I'm against corporate control of government. I would throw the corporations out of government. How in the world do we do that? I haven't heard a politician in years speak against it, basically.
Well,
when
Bernie Sanders
they get in power and then they don't do it. So how do you do that?
This
America is up, down, up from the bottom. Activism by the American people. If we don't do that, and you can stop the corporations, I think. Get outside. If you don't like what they're doing, they're polluting your environment, get down to the Coca-Cola plant with 40 or 50 demonstrators, and if you decide you want to do a little civil disobedience, set in.
Right, but here's the difference. Coca-Cola can have you arrested, whereas if you protest at your local member of Congress's office, they can't, because government is supposed to respond to us. Corporations are not supposed to respond to us.
I have some of the cases.
Yeah. So,
Martin Luther King said this.
John, do you know that the entire Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is the largest or second largest caucus in Congress, has endorsed an amendment to the Constitution to say that the Supreme Court was wrong in 76 when they said that the political money is protected by the First Amendment, and that they were wrong in Citizens United when they said that corporations should have the same rights as human beings.
I agree with all that.
Okay. So movetoamend.org, organizations like that, which is totally bipartisan. In fact, a lot of Tea Partiers are members of movetoamend.org.
Who wrote the Fourth Amendment weren't talking about corporations. They were talking about slaves, okay?
Yeah.
It's equal rights.
Yeah. Yeah, the 14th Amendment, yeah.
It's all been screwed over by money and power.
Well, it's the railroads.
Candidates today, when they run for office, have to have so much money to run for office. Who's controlling that? The corporate. People ask me, when you vote for the president, who do you vote for? You vote for a corporation.
Right.
We all know that.
So you are in favor of a constitutional amendment to get money out of politics?
Get it out.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Rutherford
Institute, I never thought I'd say that.
The three most beautiful words in English language are "we the people." That's how the Constitution starts. We are the government.
Yeah, it doesn't say "we the corporations." Although the new one, if the Republican Party gets the constitutional convention they want, maybe it'll say "we the corporations." Because right across the board, Republicans in the House and Senate are opposed to this constitutional amendment. Democrats are in favor of it, and I agree with you. I think it's necessary. John Whitehead, constitutional attorney and president of the Rutherford Institute, Rutherford.org. His new book, Battlefield America. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
15 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls and my thoughts. And a little more of the news of the day here, too. And welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Kelly in Lake Havasu City, Arizona, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Kelly, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I know it's not Friday, but I want to say a year and a half ago, I read an article on Reuters. It was a Supreme Court decision that said that if you ran from the police, that it was considered a felony and they could use deadly force. And I don't know if Shano could, you know, either make me a liar or tell me I'm right. But I remember it well because I remember reading the article with my wife and I said, this is bad.
Yeah.
And I think that cop in South Carolina is going to walk because of that Supreme Court decision.
Well, I think that cop in South Carolina is probably going to walk just because no cop has ever been convicted of killing a black man in this country in 235 years, you know, of murder, you know, of high level murder. I mean, there have been manslaughter convictions. But that kind of falls into the category of almost accidental death. But this is pretty egregious, you know, and it's in the video.
And that's what I think will be the outrage to everybody is that, you know, they'll say, oh, no, there's already precedent set. So,
yeah.
You know,
I'm pretty sure that it's Tennessee v. Garner is the case, 1985. And I don't think that it simply says that if you're running away, you can be shot. I could be wrong. Shane's reading the Supreme Court ruling right now, but I'm pretty sure that
I remember about it was that it wasn't that they said if you ran, it was that they said it was considered a felony to run from the police and that deadly force could be used.
You can't use deadly force just because somebody's committed a felony. You can only use deadly force if A, there is a threat to you, the police officer, or B, there is a threat to the public. If there is a clear and imminent threat to one or the other, then you are justified in using deadly force. If not, then, sorry, you got to do it the old-fashioned way. Tackle the guy to the ground.
Right. I'm just recounting that.
We just checked it, Kelly. Shano just pulled it up and read it. The Supreme Court did not say you can shoot somebody. They may have affirmed that running away from the police is a felony. You know, that makes a certain amount of sense, trying to evade arrest. But you cannot be shot for that. That is not a capital offense. It is simply a crime. It would
That's
be one more thing.
I'm glad to be wrong about.
Yeah, there you go. It would be one more thing you'd be charged with. But thanks a lot, Kelly. Thanks for the call. It's good to get these things tracked down and find them out. I appreciate it. Joe in Loxahatchee, Florida. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Thank God that we have somebody like you on the air.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, I think it was on Al Jazeera last Sunday or Saturday that they announced that the Senate may take the bill that the House passed overwhelmingly on Medicare and Medicaid. Is that part of that Social Security cut?
No. The Social Security cut, the way it works is that Social Security has one income stream, right, which is our FICA pay, you know, our wage, our deductions from our paycheck every week. And that one revenue stream has to be split between two pots, the Social Security Retirement Fund, essentially, which is about two-thirds of what Social Security pays out every year, and the Social Security Disability Fund, which is about one-third of what Social Security pays out. Disability Fund goes to people who are orphaned and widowed and whatnot. That every couple of years, Congress has to go in and balance the two using that one stream of income and say, okay, we're going to reallocate some money here or there. They're going to have to do that again in October of 2016. And the Republicans passed a rule the first day of the House of Representatives that they would not allow themselves to do that. So there's a crisis coming. There's no legislation, but there's a crisis coming. Thanks, Joe. A lot in the news today. I mentioned Kamal, who is trying with his family to get out of Tunisia. GoFundMe.com/Benyon's Family. Benyon's Family. Benyoune's Family. GoFundMe.com. It's worth checking out. Battlefield America. So, interesting. concerned right-wingers are concerned about corporate power, too. I think we might be reaching a tipping point in this country, and I think that Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Martin O'Malley, Lincoln Chafee, whoever may end up being the nominee for this, for the Democratic Party, and certainly as the, you know, presumably there will be a more open primary and there'll be some debates, and during that primary, the candidate who takes the most populist position, the candidate who takes the position that's closest to basically the conversation that you just heard, is going to win. Because when hard right Tea Partiers like John Whitehead are saying, yeah, I'm concerned about corporate power too, then you've got the beginnings of a national movement, and one that transcends politics, frankly. And that's what Franklin Roosevelt tapped into. People didn't care if he was a Democrat or a Republican, other than the fact that the Republicans were so wedded to doing nothing during the Great Depression. And, you know, but anyway, Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, you wanted to talk about misogyny?
Yeah, hey, Mr. Hartman, just a 20-second comment.
Go for it.
Misogyny, we all know where it started. It starts from the book called the Bible.
Right.
Supposedly Eve convinced Adam to commit sin. Now, of course, there are a lot of Democrats that believe in the book, but at least they can change to accept gay marriage, equal pay, etc. But the Republicans just seem to have a more hardcore and unforgiving interpretation towards women, which to me is just immature. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. And not only did Eve in Genesis, not only did she listen to the devil or the Satan or the snake or whatever and talk Adam or her husband into eating, taking a bite of the fruit of the tree of life, the fruit of the tree of knowledge of life. Not only did she do that, but then God cursed her by saying, you shall be cursed by having pain in childbirth for all time. So and then the third part of that is that therefore, because she is a sinner and she's been cursed by God, she being basically all women, that anybody who is born through the birth canal of a woman, or presumably even by C-section, is born with original sin, and therefore in need of salvation, which is the basis of Christian theology. And it's a part of Christian theology that I don't particularly subscribe to, frankly. But that's the shtick. And you're right. The whole misogyny thing, the whole women are the problem thing, started in the Bible. You nailed it, Michael. Thank you very much. Or the Bible is simply a religious and cultural reflection of a culture that was misogynistic to begin with. Pat in Lawrenceburg, Indiana. Hey, Pat, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Great show, man.
Thanks.
What I wanted to bring up is this Social Security windfall elimination plan. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not.
Okay. It started under Ronald Reagan, big surprise to the working man. But anyway, what it basically does is it supposedly stops double dippers. Okay, my problem with this being I had 31 years as a postal employee, and I'm now retired, and my time before and after the post office, I worked 16 years, and it had nothing to do with my postal employment, with my civil service pension.
Right, if I can just stop you for a second, Pat, and let me explain to people who are listening who don't know what you're talking about. Double dippers... There are some people in the United States who, as employees, don't pay Social Security taxes. They pay into a fund, which is essentially a pension fund, specific for their organization. And that carve-out was built into Social Security. It's been expanded over the years. A lot of those folks are federal employees, for example. And so if you worked in the private marketplace for years and years, you built up Social Security. You paid into Social Security, and you built up Social Security that is owed to you when you retire. If you worked for the government, then after that, for another decade or two, you would have built up a government pension that you are also eligible for. And with the change that Reagan made was, sorry, you can't have both. You're going to have to pick one or the other. And they're both so measly that it seems to me like just, you know, penurious. You know, it's awful. Anyhow, back to you, Pat.
Well, what ended up happening with myself is, This is my 66th birthday and entitled me to be fully eligible for what I had coming, which should have been, now this is 16 years outside of the post office. This is
right.
Not where I was getting anything to do with my postal retirement. This is,
right.
I'm being penalized for working hard. And basically, it told me I'd get $752 a month. By the time they got done with the windfall elimination, I'm down to $238. I mean, it's pretty much worth $100. I mean, it's just, what a slap in the face to hear this. And then you're talking about before how these rich guys aren't even paying into it, and they're going to collect it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. And it's another wonderful thing that you can thank Ronald Reagan for. Pat, thank you for the call. You're right, and there's so much about Social Security that, frankly, needs to be fixed. We need to expand the benefits. They have not been keeping up with inflation since the Reagan administration. We need to expand the benefits. We need to turn it into a true flat tax so that everybody pays into it. Very straightforward. And we need to do away with these stupid little changes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Somebody spent 40, 50 years working, and half of it was one place and half of it was the other place, and they earned two pensions. God bless them. We'll be back. Welcome back. John Hartman here with you. $75 billion is what it would cost to provide all low and moderate income four-year-olds in America with quality publicly funded preschool over the next 10 years, $75 billion. The Republicans right now, as we speak, in the U.S. House of Representatives are preparing to vote this week on H.R. 1105, a bill that would repeal the federal estate tax, which during that same next 10-year period is probably going to generate around $269 billion. All kinds of great stuff we could do with that, including paying down the national debt. But, you know, see, the shills for the Republicans are constantly hysterical about the national debt. The billionaires, of course, are not. They know that a national debt is a good thing for them because public debt equals private savings. The national debt is issued in treasuries, and treasuries are what people buy to invest in the United States. They loan money basically to the U.S. government, and it is the safest investment out there. And the U.S. government pays interest on that. So the truly rich Republicans understand that the national debt is irrelevant, or largely irrelevant, at least, you know, in the region that it is now. But the shills for the really rich Republicans, the official Republican Party shills, they need to get the suckers all worked up and hysterical. And so they freak them out by saying, oh, it's just like your family and you got to have, you know, you've got to balance your budget at the end of the day and all that kind of. No, governments are not families. Families cannot issue their own currency out of thin air. Families can't do that. Governments can. Families don't control the rules of trade. Families don't control the rules of business. Families, I mean, government and families are completely different things. It's stupid. There's no other word. It's stupid to compare a family, a household budget with a government budget. It's stupid. It's irrelevant. It's inconsequential. It doesn't work. It's stupid. But the Republicans, you know, but they do it constantly. But here's the proof that they really don't care. They're willing to blow off $269 billion that they would get from the estate tax. And the estate tax, by the way, hits 0.2% of people when they die. It doesn't hit the person. It hits their heirs. And it's a transfer tax. Somebody dies, and they transfer their wealth to their kids or to somebody else in their family or to whomever. And if it's less than $10.9 million for a married couple, there's no tax. And if it's more than that, there's a tax, and it's a progressive tax. It starts out small and goes up as the amounts go up. So this is the sort of thing that average working people, average wealthy people, I'm not talking about billionaire wealthy, I'm talking about upper middle class wealthy, you know, the people who make a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, people who may have a few million dollars in assets, they don't worry about the estate tax. You have to have assets, you know, that are worth over $10 million before you even have to consider the estate tax. Then there's all kinds of ways around it. It's just the truly rich who get hit with it. And it's relatively small. It doesn't affect them in any consequential way. But the Republicans, because the Republicans in the House and the Senate are the servants of the billionaire class, they want to do away with the estate tax. So you may also want to let your legislators know that H.R. 1105. See, this is what happens when you get a Republican control of the House and Senate. Can you imagine if you had a Republican president? A Republican president would sign that legislation. This will probably pass the House, and it'll probably pass the Senate. or it might pass the Senate. It depends on whether the Democrats decide to filibuster it, but it will not pass President Obama. And it would not pass President Martin O'Malley or President Lincoln Chafee or President Hillary Rodham Clinton or President Bernie Sanders. It wouldn't pass any of them. It does matter which party is in office. It matters hugely. Okay, we got a lot on the table, from taxes to Republicans to white privilege to, you know, the redneck who's saying, hey, white people, wake up. And this is the thing that I keep saying is, you know, the problem in America, the big problem in our racial conversation is, you know, President Obama tentatively tried to start a national dialogue on race twice. But it's just damn hard to do. And the main reason it's damn hard to do is because the vast majority of white people in this country don't know anybody of color, have never had any consequential interactions with people of color, and don't understand white privilege. Teresa in Grays Lake, Illinois. Hey, Teresa, what's up?
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm a white woman married to a white man, and we have 6 kids. 5 are biological, and 1 is an African-American boy that we adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen some really disturbing things that have gone on with my son in terms of when we go to a shopping mall or a department store. You know, my kids are older, and so they kind of go and look at what they're interested in. The girls could look for clothes. The boys always want to look at gadgets.
Right.
But when my black son goes over to look at things, I've noticed clerks and supposedly security people follow him wherever he goes. All he does is pick up and look at something, and then he moves on later.
Right.
And they continue to. There was one time I caught the security guy like stalking him, and I asked him what he was doing, and he was flustered. He didn't know what to say. Like, why are you right behind him watching him do, just looking at some iPod or something?
Right.
Some kind of gadget.
Was the response of the security guards something along the lines of, oh my God, I didn't realize he had a white mother. I guess your white privilege should cover him as well. My apologies.
Exactly. Exactly. That's happened many times. And it's just, it's maddening. I try to keep it together, but I get a little frustrated when I have my white kids all over the store and no one's following them.
Yeah.
No, I do get those remarks from people, you know, like, oh, he's with you.
Right.
I don't know.
He's with you is another way of saying, oh, should I treat him as if he was a white person? Should I extend the perks of white privilege to him? You know, I'll bet that there are a lot of biracial couples in this country, or biracial families, multiracial families. Bill de Blasio comes to mind immediately. You know, white mayor of New York City with a black wife and mixed race children, who could tell just amazing stories like your story, Teresa, and hopefully it might wake up some white people.
I hope so.
Yeah, thanks so much for sharing it with us. It's a great story, and thank you for listening to WCPT, and good on you for adopting, Teresa. Thank you, Sammy in Alachua, Florida. Hey, Sammy, excuse me, you want to talk about Marco Rubio?
Oh, yes, a great senator. But part of his speech I heard on it was talking about the rags to riches,
mm-hmm,
of the immigrant and stuff. And I said, if you look at it, nobody said anything about it. It was before Reaganomics hit, so that nobody can do that anymore. Isn't, you know, almost impossible.
Yeah, social mobility. Before Reaganomics hit us, the level of social mobility in the United States, the ability to be born into a lower economic class and end up in a higher economic class later in your life, was among the highest in the world. We were one of the most mobile societies in the world before Reaganomics. Today, out of the 34 OECD countries, we are number 33.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we used to be number 1.
You know, somebody needs to, next time you start spouting that, you know, the American dream, which was before Reagan.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Reagan recalibrated the American dream. He turned the American dream into a lottery. The American dream used to be, you know, get a good job, keep your nose clean. You know, you've heard me say this a million times. You know, the story of my dad, basically, that was the American dream. And Reagan recalibrated that to the American dream is you too can be rich. You know, you too can get the winning lottery ticket. You too might be the next star on some reality show, or you too might be, you know, whatever. And therefore we should all be thinking like rich people. We should all be working on behalf of rich people, because you never know, you might be one of those rich people someday. And it's a lie, it's a scam, and it has devastated the middle class in the United States. Well said, Sammy. Thanks a lot for the call. Harvey in Berkeley. Hey, Harvey. National Bankruptcy Day?
No. Well, you know, it's that time of year again, April 16th, National Back Rub Day.
Oh, Back Rub. Okay.
Yes, National Back Rub Day, the day after taxes. I'm talking about real tax relief here.
Yeah.
And taxpayers sharing back rubs, healing each other. And I feel that we're definitely living in a world that's out of touch. There's so many forces that keep us at each other's throats. And I think National Back Rub Day is a good time to get back in touch with us and start to save the world. And here in Berkeley, I had a little program going at one of the local senior centers for about 3 years, where it turns out the seniors, you know, they hardly ever get touched. Their families are gone, a lot of them, and they're not so beautiful anymore. So I started a program called Sharing Neck Rubs, where they weren't just waiting for someone to give them a rub. I had them giving each other neck rubs,
mm-hmm.
and it was a great program. It ran for about 3 years, and a lot of people really, I thought it enhanced their health and
oh, it does. Social, people need to be touched. When you're touched, there's an endorphin response, the endorphin cascade that comes about as a consequence of that actually stimulates your immune system in a positive way, as well as the serotonin systems, as well as your emotional regulation. Being touched is really important, whether it's a massage or a hug or, you know, whatever.
And they say that babies die if they don't get touched. And here in Berkeley, I share neck rubs in cafes with people fully dressed, sitting in chairs, and it's a wonderful experience. So I say National Back Rub Day, the day after taxes.
Okay, so you're proposing this, Harvey.
Yes, I am.
Okay, National Back Rub Day, April 16th. Harvey just invented it, and I think it's a great idea. Although I think every day should be National Back Rub Day. Thanks, Harvey.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
One of our kids was a massage therapist for a lot of years. There is real science to this. It's really serious stuff. We'll be back. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. And Steve watching Free Speech TV in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Steve, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Yeah, the massages are great. I haven't had a professional one since back in the 70s, but it's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, we all need to do it more often.
You betcha. You betcha. I was listening earlier today, and you had cautioned about using the word means testing when speaking. You were speaking with Paul in Woodinville. You know, he's a great champion and fighter for Social Security.
Yeah.
And I really appreciate his passion. But you know what? I was just on MSN, and I see where Chris Christie is going to deliver a speech in New Hampshire, and he's going to be outlining his ideas on reforming Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And he calls these so-called entitlement programs.
Right.
And what he's going to do, he's going to propose phasing out Social Security payments for those making more than $80,000 and other income. But the big thing is eliminating them for those making $200,000 or more a year.
Right.
And apparently this is released by his political action committee, Leadership Matters for America, you know, a luncified term.
Right.
And then here's the other thing, too. He also wants to propose raising the retirement ages for Social Security and Medicare.
Right, to 67 for Medicare, 67 for the initial for Social Security, and 69 for full benefits. Yeah, you're right. And, in fact, I opened the show with that. And you know, it's just...
Oh, I missed that. I'm
yeah.
Sorry.
Means testing is the way to destroy any kind of government program, number one. Social Security is not a welfare program. It's an insurance policy. We all pay into it, and we are all eligible for the benefits of it. It's an insurance policy against when you're young, against disaster, because if you become disabled and you're under 65, you are eligible for Social Security disability. So all of us have a multi-million dollar lifetime liability insurance policy, which is an astonishing thing. Most of us couldn't afford to buy that from an insurance company. You have that through Social Security. And we have a retirement plan or a retirement actually, it's not even a retirement plan. It's old age poverty insurance, so that you never fall below a certain point. and Chris Christie wanting to mess with this, and then means testing. As soon as you means test something, I mean, you know, then it's like, I mean, you know, when Bill Clinton went after the Great Society welfare programs along with Newt Gingrich and said we're going to end welfare as we know it, he was able to go after those programs because they were all means tested. Means tested programs mean that rich people don't get them. People making over $80,000 a year don't get those programs, and so they don't care about them. And at least in white Republican world, that's most of your voters or many of your voters. And even in, you know, among some Democrats, it's like, you know, people generally don't care about what happens to poor people, and poor people unfortunately don't vote. Something that needs to change in this country.
It's a real slippery slope to start just chipping away at the program till it becomes inconsequential.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is the strategy. And, you know, raising the retirement age is making the program less valuable. Here's the problem that Republicans have with Social Security. For 75 years or longer, Social Security has worked brilliantly. It's never missed a check. It operates on a 2 or 3% overhead, which basically no corporation in America can do. Social Security proves that government can work. And that's what Republicans hate, because they want this country to be run by billionaires and corporations, not by government responsive to we the people. And they thank you, Steve, for the call. And they cloak that in this thing called libertarianism or conservative economics, or I'm a social liberal but an economic conservative. It's all nonsense. What this is an attempt to take a $2.5 trillion Social Security trust fund and give it to Wall Street. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, and let's check in with the Talk Radio News Service to find out what's going on in the news of the day. This report brought to you by the story of Sholene and Kier, the slave from South Sudan. Kier is the slave. Sholene is Ellen Ratner's wife, and Kier is Ellen's adopted son. He was a slave from South Sudan who they had hung him upside down and poured hot pepper in his eyes to the point where it blinded him. You can see the whole story over at thanklist.com/watch. Bob Ney is with us with the Talk Radio News Service, the author of Sideswiped, former Republican member of Congress. And Congressman, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am well. It's nice to see you. Great to have you with us today.
Thank you.
So what's going on in the world?
Well, let me start with Senator Rubio, if I could, for a second.
Certainly.
A little bit different twist than his announcement, which I must say, though, speaking from a person who was active myself in Republican politics, he is exciting because he comes on the heels of Senator Cruz, and I won't go into that, and then on the heels of Rand Paul, who had a 3-day launch of debating the media versus issues.
Right.
And along comes Rubio. But what's most interesting about him is the fact that he, of course, directly hit on Hillary Clinton, because right now all the candidates on the Republican side are doing that. They've taken sure. the old Reagan vow, which will be broken, I would say. What time is it?
give me a few
next
weeks.
2 hours.
Right.
And but it's interesting because he also took a swipe indirectly at Jeb Bush, in the sense of saying, you know, he came from father was a bartender, mother was a maid, and didn't, you know, evolve into the birth of power and legacy, et cetera. So that was a swipe at Jeb Bush, but the interesting thing is this zip code, Tom, 33126, that's the zip code of West Miami, which happens to have the most amount of people registered in the healthcare program in America, bar none.
You mean there's more people signed up for Obamacare in that zip code than anywhere else in the country?
West Miami, right where he, you know, was raised, and it's 33126 is the zip code. And the top 15 of the country are also in Florida. But I just wanted to mention 33126, as they say, he's going to have some explaining to do because more people are enrolling in there. But I just thought that was fascinating.
Right,
that
and he wants to nuke it. He wants to do away with Obamacare.
Exactly. So there's going to be a lot of debate on that as that story gets, I think,
Bob,
gets
I have
around.
A couple of theories about this whole
sure.
Republican politics thing. And mm-hmm. you, as a former Republican politician, might have some insight.
Sure.
One of the things that I've noticed is that Republicans tend to nominate for president people who have already lost a primary in a previous cycle, whether it was John McCain, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon. I mean, basically since Eisenhower. I think that's true.
True.
I think that's true of everybody, with the exception of Gerry Ford, who was an accidental president.
Yes.
And which raises the question, And also, Marco Rubio and Rand Paul are both looking at the possibility of losing their Senate seats if they actually become the presidential nominee and lose that as well. Then they would just be totally out. Is it possible that these guys are trying to basically get in line, not for 2016, but for 2020 or 2024, by having their first unsuccessful primary runs so that the next time around they can be taken seriously? And if they do it right, if they jump in now in 2015 and by, say, December or January of this year or January of next year, say, hey, you know, it looks like I'm not going to get the nomination, they drop out, or if the nomination's already been assigned by then, although I think it happens next year, you tell me, then he can go back to running for the Senate. Or have either one of them, because both of their states, Tennessee or Kentucky and Florida, both say you can't run for two federal offices at the same time. Are those states going to change those rules or those laws? Or B, have either of these guys actually announced that they are leaving their office and told the Republican Party, go ahead and find somebody to replace me because I'm not coming back no matter what?
Well, that's interesting. I don't think the laws will be changed. That would just be too high stakes, risky, and too difficult. I think in Ted Cruz's case, frankly, Tom, he raises money.
Well, Ted Cruz is not up for re-election in the Senate in 2 years, is he?
Right. Okay. And he raises money.
But it's Marco. I'm talking about Marco Rubio and Rand Paul.
Rand Paul. Right. And with Rand Paul, I think it's a matter of out there, you know, one time, and then maybe he won't go through with it, or he could lose, you know, for the second time. I've always suspicion with Rubio because of his great friendship with Jeb Bush, but I've also suspicioned he was jockeying for a vice presidential slot, although how could you have two people from Florida, you know, if it's Jeb Bush? But then again, a lot of people don't think it's going to be Jeb Bush.
Right.
So
the other wild card here is that the Koch brothers are going to put $1 billion into this, and Scott Walker is their boy.
I believe that Scott Walker, who beat Jeb Bush in the polls coming out of CPAC, I don't think he did that by accident. I don't think he did it all because of publicity he had, with the negative publicity included up there. But I think there's, you know, certain ways people do expenditures. They do mailers, you know, they do support, and mean the Koch brothers, and that's their guy.
Yeah.
So I think that Rubio knows, or thinks in his heart, it's not going to be Jeb Bush, and he opposed him in Florida, because why would you run, when you start to think about it, against Jeb Bush when, you know, he was friends of his and
right.
They're both from Florida?
So you think that Rubio's betting on a Walker Rubio ticket?
That's what I'm thinking, because, yeah, you know, why would you do that?
That makes a lot of sense to me, because Walker is so white bread Midwest, and Rubio
Absolutely.
Brings in the Hispanic vote, or at least hopefully, and the Southern vote.
And so I think I think there's something else out there. Now, again, Ted Cruz might actually believe he could be elected president, but
I don't think he's got a chance.
No, he doesn't. There's no way.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, in his own mind, maybe he looked in the mirror and thought he could be elected president, or was ordained or something.
I think Ted Cruz is going to go down in history as sort of the version of Michelle Bachmann kind of thing.
Right. But he'll raise money. I mean, let's face it. You know, people are going to weigh to the right of the right of the right, you know, the John Boltons of the world, et cetera. They're going to love him.
Right.
And he'll raise some money.
Yeah. Okay. We only have about a half a minute left, Bob. Any other urgent news?
Yes. I just want to go into Iran real quick, because this is going to be a nightmare of a bill, in the sense of the bill will not make sense if it gets through the Senate. The House has been super quiet, Tom. I think they know they may not have a veto proof vote, but in the Senate itself, that bill is going to look ridiculous by the time it goes to the president.
This is Bob Corker's 47 traders bill
to blow up
the president's ability to negotiate with Iran.
It'll be unworkable.
Yeah. That's good news. Bob Ney, thank you so much, Bob.
Thank you.
Author of Sideswiped. Check it out.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. One of those little noticed stories might have just slipped by us all. Did you notice I saw it originally as a little piece in the New York Times a couple days ago that, in fact, I think it was Thursday or Friday of last week, that the Putin administration in Russia had an embargo on selling missiles to Iran. And Iran is an ally of Russia. And President Putin has lifted that embargo. Now, on its surface, Americans might go, what? Putin needs some money to sell some missiles? I mean, it's a quick way to raise some bucks. Or, hey, Iran wants missiles. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? But here's what I think is going on. I see this as one of those chess games, you know, where the move you're making is setting up the move three moves down. Because if Iran takes delivery of intermediate or even long-range missiles from Russia, missiles that could hit Europe or the United States, you know, I believe Iran already has short-range missiles that could hit the Middle East. But if Iran took a delivery of those missiles, our ability to do what Tom Cotton is strongly suggesting that we do right now, Tom Cotton, the Republican senator from Arkansas, I believe it is, who is the leader of the 47 traitors in the U.S. Senate, our ability to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities once they've got those missiles is gone. You know, without fear of retaliation, is gone. Then we move into a world of mutually assured destruction, which was the, you know, basically what held together the Cold War. Soviet Union had all these missiles. We had all these missiles. Neither one of us fired first because it meant the other would fire back. And then you know. And thus, we end up with enough missiles to sterilize the planet, basically. And it's pretty bizarre stuff. I wondered where. At first, I was thinking, you know, where did this come from? And now it's like, oh yeah, that makes perfect geopolitical, geostrategic thoughts. Another thing here: did you see where this guy, the 73-year-old, the way it's being portrayed in the media? Was his name Eric Harris? I don't have the story in front of me. I'm sorry. I believe it was Eric Harris, young unarmed black man who was taken down by the police. And then the story in the media is that a white sheriff's deputy ran up to him, pulled out what he thought was a taser. In fact, it was a gun. He shot this guy in the upper shoulder, and I'm assuming it penetrated either his lung or one of his arteries there, because he died relatively quickly. And the video shows him saying, you know, I just lost my breath, which is what happens when a bullet goes through your lung. You start breathing through the bullet hole rather than through your, you know. And he says, I just lost my breath. And the deputy who's kneeling on him with his knee on this guy's neck and his hand on his head, smashing his face into the concrete, says, you know, uses the F word and says, blank your breath. And the guy's dead within a few minutes. Now, that's the story that's in the media. Here's where it gets really interesting. Our police departments are being funded by this hodgepodge of stuff. I mean, you know, Bill Clinton with his 100,000 cops, he actually raised taxes on rich people and took enough money, it was millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, as I recall, to make it possible to hire, train, and deploy 100,000 police officers onto the streets of America, beat cops, not SWAT teams, not, you know, giant intel centers, not all this kind of, you know, fancy stuff that the Toys for Boys crowd loves, but just good old-fashioned cops on the street. George W. Bush did away with that. And ever since the era of Reaganomics, we've seen police departments, sheriff's departments, and whatnot being dialed back economically in the same way that everything else that is government is being dialed back economically. And so they'd have to start looking for money. And the two principal ways that police departments around the country have been getting money is, number one, they get money by basically arresting people. They get money by, you know, they arrest you for a crime and they say, hey, you used your car in that crime, we're going to take the car and sell it, keep the money. You used your home in that crime, we're going to sell your house and keep the money. You got some money with you, we're going to take that money. Here's a $100 ticket for a broken taillight. If you don't show up to pay this ticket, or if you can't afford to pay this ticket the next X number of days, then, you know, it goes to court, it becomes a $1,000 fine. And if you fail to show up for that, then it becomes an arrest warrant. And pretty soon, you know, you're in jail for having had a headlight out, or having made a left turn in a no left turn lane, or having rolled through a stop sign, all presumably while black, because that's principally where most of this comes from, is white police officers basically using black communities as piggy banks and just shaking the money out of them. But the second way that police departments are getting money in the United States is by turning to donors. Remember when Occupy was outside J.P. Morgan Chase? Occupy had taken Zuccotti Park, and I think it was J.P. Morgan. It was one of the big banks, was like right next door, and the banksters were throwing down derisive flyers and things, making fun of people and sitting up there sipping champagne and having a good time. Remember that? And remember, you know, how it just kind of went on for week after week after week. And then all of a sudden, the New York police came in with pepper spray and bulldozers and all kinds of stuff and just destroyed the Occupy thing. Right after Jamie Dimon, as I recall, of J.P. Morgan Chase, had given, as I recall, $4.5 million to the New York Police Benevolent Association, the New York Police Officers Party Fund, basically. So they're looking for donations. You got police departments all around the country looking for donations. And this guy, this quote, sheriff's deputy who shot this young African-American man and killed him, saying that he thought he was pulling out his taser. This guy wasn't even a cop. He was a donor. He was a donor to the police department. Was it Tulsa? To the Tulsa Police Department? He donated money to them, and in exchange for that donation, they let him go through a simple training program, gave him a gun and a badge, and said, you too can play police. Just give us enough money. And this is just a real tragedy. I mean, a guy is dead now because of this, and the guy who shot him, this 73-year-old donor to the police department, is looking at being charged with manslaughter. It's a tragedy all around. It's a disaster all around. Why? Because we are not funding our police departments well enough. We really need to take a lesson from what goes on in Europe. In Northern Europe, being a cop is as important, as difficult to get that job, and as high status a profession as being a teacher or a physician. Teachers, doctors, and cops are all paid about the same in most of the Scandinavian countries. They're all well paid, the top end of the middle class. What in U.S. dollars might be, you know, 100 grand a year or thereabouts, between 80 and 120 something. You know, and you have to have a college degree in criminal justice to be a police officer in most Northern European countries. And it's a profession. It's a profession that people are proud of, rather than just a job. And the police really have this sense of, we're here to protect and serve rather than we're here to occupy and control. We've got to stop police departments from passing out guns and badges in exchange for donations. That's nuts. And frankly, we need to stop them from taking money from people like Jamie Dimon in exchange for trashing Occupy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I mean, we live in a country where rich people can even pay the police to pepper spray the people that are harassing the rich people. How bad is that? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Diane, watching Free Speech TV in Douglasville, Georgia. Hey, Diane, thanks for watching on DirecTV. You wanted to comment on Marco Rubio?
Yes, Tom. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm just calling to remind Mr. Rubio that somebody of yesterday was the one who worked hard so that he can be where he is today. I'm talking about his mother and his father.
Right.
So if they are yesterday people, he got a lot of wisdom from them so that he could be where he is. They worked hard. And I resented the feeling that at my age, 75, when I can do anything to help my children and grandchildren, someone would refer to me as yesterday. That means I'm not aware of what is happening in the world today. Another thing, it is very good they have the Bible always as a reason. Rehoboam and Jehoboam. That story will teach us a lot. I remember two last lines when the younger one went in. He said, "My father chastised you with whips. I will chastise you with scorpions." There's a lot of things
with what?
In that. Scorpions.
Oh, scorpions.
Jeroboam
okay.
and Rehoboam. They know the story. They know a lot about Old Testament, okay?
Yeah.
And this woman from CNN. And this woman from CNN yesterday when she said that Hillary will be talking and spewing estrogen. Tom?
Yeah.
And I heard that statement as a woman. I cringe. It's as if goosebumps took over my
mind. Wait a minute. Marco Rubio mentioned estrogen in the context of Hillary.
No, this woman, no. She's on one of the C-SPAN communicator.
Uh-huh. Okay.
She is Hispanic. She's always there. Never, I can't remember her name.
Right.
Right? So she was on the area today with Donna, who is the one from, right? And it is so disgusting. Here is a woman telling the world that estrogen is what Hillary has to come and talk with them, and they have to be careful of her with the use of estrogen. Thank God she won't have to use estrogen. That's all we can say.
Yeah.
We live in a world, Tom, we are brothers and sisters.
Apparently Anne Navarro was the one who said
this. One God who said, when you pray, say, "Our Father."
Yeah.
And if we believe that, we'd have less disagreement, we'd show more love, and we would not have this thing of inhuman, man, inhumanity to man. That's the thing that, you know, find very, very strange and hurtful. We are one, and we want the best for everyone. When my children are having steak, I want to know the other person from it may be having chicken. They're getting the protein or having fish.
Yeah.
Drink it just the same way, because we are one people all over the world. I am someone who remember that line, two things in the Bible: love God with all your heart and your neighbors as yourself.
Right. And this encapsulates the entirety of the commandments, or words to that effect, is what Jesus said. You're right, Diane. Diane, thank you for the call. And I agree that somebody needs to sit Marco Rubio down and talk with him about humility. But he's young. You know, when I was young, I was really smart, and I thought I was wise. And I look back now, and I was not wise. I was just smart. Wisdom comes with age. And it comes with processing your knowledge through experience. And Marco Rubio does not have that. 20 minutes past. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news, the Tom Hartman Program. And Ann in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Ann, thanks for listening.
Hi.
To KBAI. What's up?
Well, Tom, my heart goes out to that woman that had the six kids, and she adopted the black boy. And I'm just sitting there going, ever since Obama has been elected, I've just seen so much racism and, I mean, beyond what I can even comprehend.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that Eric Garner's statement, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, I can't breathe, should be really solid in everyone's mind, because that was so chilling.
Yeah.
And it just seems like it's almost every day now,
mm-hmm.
where there's a white cop killing a black youth.
You know,
I
think this has been going on for 400 years, and it's just, and in a way, and yeah, it seems like there's massively more racism and more racial conflict. But I think, frankly, there's more of it in the media. We're more aware of it. But I suspect as a consequence of that, the actual incidence of racism is probably declining, although the white racists, the skinheads, the Aryan Brother folks, those kind of groups, they're making hay while the sun shines. I mean, they're yeah. using it for recruiting.
Yeah, and the Ku Klux Klan,
right.
the requirement to be a Christian, to be a member. I'm just kind of going, don't people see how crazy
yeah.
that is?
Yeah, yeah. How can you be a Christian and a Klan member at the same time? And yeah, you're right. And it's the Christian Knights of the
yeah.
Ku Klux Klan. Excellent points, all. And you wanted to talk about white male privilege and women?
Well, kind of. I'm just saying that I really appreciate you bringing up white male privilege, because I don't think people get it.
Right.
And I get it. And I just want, you know, people, like, I feel that women that are in that patriarchy are worse than men. They're more savage and cruel. And I just think we got to get, you know, everyone's talking about the Bible. Well, do unto others. I mean, there's really simple statements in the Bible that you can follow.
Yeah, yeah, there
you
go.
To be a good Christian, you don't have to hate.
Yeah, well, and not just Christian, of any religion, of any faith, or just as a decent person. I mean, there's this secularism and atheism are, you know, both all have solid moral codes as well. And
oh, yeah.
excellent points, all. Thank you for the call and for making them. Jeannie in Glenwood Springs, Colorado. Hey, Jeannie, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I listen to you every day. I record your program, so I get 4 hours of Tom Hartman.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Misogyny, there has to be something more said about it. I don't think you emphasize it enough. I've been simmering for at least a couple of months now. So here's what you mentioned. Men, black men, yes. I'm a female white southerner raised by southern women. Didn't even realize how ignorant I was until I got out of the South and out of small white communities.
Mm.
And it's astounding. However, the ignorance of how men, not just white men, yes, white men, top of the list, then you have men of color. Then you have brown men, and then you go down. For each one of those categories, women fall last.
Right. And that was my point yesterday.
So
women,
anytime
women.
You discuss discrimination against men, that black males, because that's the ones that get discriminated against, you bring up how women are treated, maybe just 1 hour a week
yeah.
on raising the consciousness. Good. I also fought in that revolution, and at least tried.
Yeah.
Raise consciousness of those women out there who were ignorant, who are ignorant like I was, who are mistreated, who can look at the man sitting across the desk from her who gets $2 more an hour, and she probably does twice as much work. I had that. I found out that the guy across the desk from me was making $2 more an hour than I was. I went to my boss. I said, why? Oh, well, he has a family. I'm home supporting a child.
Right.
Single parent all my life. Training programs for women. Great. I remember training programs for women, and they were basically low-wage training programs. And how many women can go to the training and feed their families, especially in Illinois, where it's $25 a week that you can get out, or a day. You can't even buy basic necessities for $25 a day.
I got it, Gene. And I think that the candidacy now, the officially announced candidacy of Hillary Clinton, is going to provide what would you call it, a stepping off point, I guess, much like the murder of young black men has provided a stepping off point. These continual police murders has provided a stepping off point for discussion of race in America, that Hillary Clinton is going to, already is, in fact, we've been having this conversation all this week on this program, is going to provide a good stepping off point for a good, healthy conversation on misogyny and you know, white male privilege. So, Jeannie, I'm with you. Thank you. Caleb in Lake Oswego, Oregon. Hey, Caleb, we've got a minute. It's yours.
Boy, sir, your signal-to-noise ratio is so terrific. I just love hearing you. You know, I have a series of two ideas for ads, Tom, going on your theme of what have the Republicans done and so on. I'd love to see a simple rollout of a Democratic ad that says, you know, what have Democrats done for you, and just go through the list, just picture after picture, music and families just showing what they've done.
Right.
I mean, I just think that in 2 minutes you could just transform the country. On the other hand, too, you could say, you know, what would Democrats like to do, and then their agenda. On the other hand, you'd also say, and what have Republicans really done for you?
Right.
And just show that as well. But the stark comparison just in a couple of minutes would be so riveting.
Yeah, it would. It would. In fact, let me kick that idea around with a couple of the people that I do television with, because it would be a hoot to develop a couple of TV ads. And, you know, along those lines, just kind of institutional general ads. That'd be fascinating. Caleb, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. It's 28 minutes past the hour. We will be back with more of your calls, my thoughts, and the news of the day right after this break. Stick around.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
And you can drop into our free live chat room over at tomhartman.com. There's message boards. There's you can have your own blog. There's all kinds of cool stuff going on there. It's all free. It's the True People's Media, the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome back. So glad to have you with us. And Larry in Brandon, Florida. Hey, Larry. Thanks for listening to WMNF. What's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. I just wanted to say that Sunday I was at a little gathering, people in front of mine, and Hillary announced her candidacy. Friend of mine is a working class person in the 50s. He spoke up and said to me, that's not a woman's place to do something to the effect, not a woman's place to do something like that. She, you know, belongs in the kitchen or something to that implication.
Right.
So what do you think about that? I didn't even know how to respond. He just took me, I mean, I've had disagreements with him before, but
yeah.
That took me so aback that I just said, I don't know how to respond to that.
My simple question would be, why do you have to have a penis to be president? What is it about a penis that makes you more qualified to be president? I'm serious. I mean, you know, because basically the difference between men and women is, you know, equipment, right? And beyond that, you know,
as far as I know, yeah.
Yeah, our brains tend to, you know, be very similar and work in similar ways. I mean, there are some gender differences. I'm not trying to minimize them, but why does it take a penis to become president of the United States? You know, and I suspect if you asked him that way, it may cause him at least to think about it.
I just don't think it was a mixed company. I don't think that would have been the appropriate.
But why does it then? You could say, you know, why does it take that equipment between your legs to be president? I thought that, you know, this had to do with how your head worked, how your mind worked.
Well, it occurs to me there might be a lot more people out there beside him thinking.
Oh, of course. That's my whole point, is I think it's going to be harder for Hillary Clinton to get elected than it was for Barack Obama, because I think that there are more men out there who hate women than there are white people who hate black people. Now, I might be wrong, but, you know, we'll see. Time will tell. But I really think that misogyny, and I think that, you know, there are all kinds of levels and dimensions of subtle racism, and a lot of them are unintentional, and a lot of them are unintentional. I think the same is true of misogyny, and I think that because pretty much everybody in America of all races has women in their lives, whereas probably a third to two-thirds of America do not have people in their lives, directly in their lives, of of a different race, that misogyny may run even deeper. Now, maybe not. Maybe because there is, you know, contact with women. You know, if men are fathers, their husbands, their sons. Maybe there's less misogyny than there is racism. But my guess is that there's more. That's going to be harder. Excuse me. It's going to be harder for Hillary Clinton. Larry, thanks for the call. That's very interesting. Paul in Warren, Michigan. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am well. What's up? Adam and Eve?
Yeah, that too. But I wanted to say first that I love Free Speech TV. My two favorite shows is your program and Mike Papantonio, Ring of Fire.
Thank you. Yeah, he does a great job.
I would that more people had access to Free Speech TV. Here in Michigan, AT&T UVerse doesn't offer it. Wow doesn't offer it. Comcast doesn't offer it.
Paul, anybody who has an internet connection can watch Free Speech TV over at freespeech.org.
Okay. I do not believe that God cursed Adam and Eve. He punished them.
Isn't the word cursed used in the Bible?
It's used, but it's used when he's talking to the serpent.
But I thought he said that, and I don't have the biblical verse in front of me, and it's probably been a decade since I read it, but my recollection was he said, you know, you, woman, will be cursed with the pain of childbirth for all time.
No, that's a punishment.
So the word punishment is used. Okay.
We're
splitting hairs, Paul. I think the important distinction here is that men have used that biblical story. And by the way, it's not unique to Judaism and Christianity and Islam. That kind of a story occurs in many of the founding stories, the creation stories of many of the modern, particularly monotheistic religions, that end up being male dominated because the monotheistic is always a guy with a penis. It's always a man who is the god. Whether God cursed or punished women almost doesn't matter. The story that has been carried down all these years is that women are cursed and worthy of being punished.
So many people have it wrong. They don't pay attention to the words. I mean, it's like you got some people that say there were two creations. No, there weren't. There was one creation of mankind.
Well, there's two creation stories in Genesis.
And they were
clearly written by two different tribes.
There's only one. There's the creation, and there is the formation.
Yeah, okay.
The word became is very important. People do not pay attention to that.
I understand.
In order to become anything, you have to be something before. The Bible tells us that God is a spirit. So when mankind was created in the image and likeness of God, he was spirit. God formed him out of the dust of the ground later. And then man, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul.
Right, and I get it, Paul, that you honestly and sincerely and genuinely believe that to be literally true. I don't. I think it's metaphor. But whether your version is correct or my version is correct, almost doesn't matter because there's all across this country, all around the world, there are people who are using those biblical verses, that Genesis creation story of Eve screwed up, regardless of how God reacted to it. Eve screwed up, therefore, we got to control these women. We can't let them drive. We can't let them show their heads. We can't let them show their faces. We can't let them be doctors. We can't let them be lawyers. We can't let them get educated, blah, 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 blah. And it's all over the world, and it's not unique to any one place. And this and religion seems to be at the base, if not causing it, at least rationalizing it, and has for a long, long time. It's a terrible thing. Paul, I got to move on, but thank you for the call. Joe in Chevy Chase. Hey, Joe, what's up? Chevy Chase, Maryland.
Thanks.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for listening to Progressive Voices.
No problem. We've disagreed on things before, but I do agree with what you had Mr. Whitehead on and some of the common threads between libertarians and progressives, and in that the fear of corporate power in the government. And, I think, we have a lot of disagreements, but there is fruitful ground there to do develop some alliances. I mean, if you look at the bailout controversy that happened, the people that were opposing that in Congress were essentially Tea Party Republicans and the more progressive wings of the Democratic Party. So, I think it's, sometimes you start going off on libertarians and some conservatives and act like we're all cut out of the same cloth. And I think that's a little bit, I understand you're doing it for rhetoric and everything like that, but it's also a little bit short-sighted.
Well, Joe, if you can explain to me how a libertarian country could work, because it's never happened in the history of the world, or if you can explain to me even one consequential accomplishment of the last 130 years of Republican Party politics outside of that brief period of Teddy Roosevelt and William Howard Taft, who were both progressives. If you can explain to me even one Republican policy that was conceived and passed into law by Republicans that benefits average working people instead of billionaires, I will withdraw my blanket condemnation. But I don't think you can.
Well, everything I would come up with, you would just disagree with. Tax cuts, giving government off the back of people.
What tax cuts?
Regulation.
What tax cuts? You talking about Reagan's tax cuts for billionaires? He raised taxes on people making less than $40,000 a year 18 times. He only cut taxes on really rich people. Is that what you're talking about?
Oh. Look, I know the game you're playing. You act like all Democrats are. Why don't you explain to your listeners what the Democracy Alliance is, which is a huge group of corporate Democrats. You actually went to speak there, and they.
I didn't speak there. I was just at a meeting.
Yes, you did. You went to one of their meetings. It's a whole bunch of corporate Democrats.
That's what I just said. I said I was at a meeting. I didn't speak there. The Democracy Alliance is a group of wealthy Democrats who get together twice a year and figure out what they're going to support. They support a lot of progressive infrastructure. What is wrong with that? It's all transparent.
No, it's not. They fund scores of millions of dollars, and they're made up of wealthy millionaires and billionaires. Just like you always act like you don't agree. Except you don't have any problem taking leads from Putin.
I take nothing from them or from Putin.
How much do you get paid by RT?
I am not paid by RT. I own my show and my show. What has the Republican Party done that has helped anybody, Joe?
So you don't want to.
Okay. Hack in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hey, Hack, what are you doing? Oh, 10 seconds? Okay. Hack, let me put you on hold. Hang on just a second. We'll be back. It's coming up on 15 minutes before the hour. And, stick around. We'll be right back.
Listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Back with your calls in 15 minutes. Or in just a moment. It's 15 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. James in Spokane, Washington. Hey, James, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing today? It's a testy day for you.
No, it's really not. I'm fine.
Yeah,
it's like when arguments become personalized, it's no longer an argument, it's a personal attack. And it's like, it's hard to know how to respond to that.
Hard to respond to presumption.
Yeah.
I wanted to say, psychologically, they say that we hate what we fear. We fear what we don't understand.
All right.
And men don't understand women. We joke about it all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it has a lot to do with police violence, too.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're afraid of perpetrators. Perpetrators are afraid of them. And some of it's justified, because in all honesty, if I had to do the time for doing the crime, most people would. But if you're going to send me to a torture asylum for any period of time, God help me, I might consider killing a cop or two.
And our prisons have become torture asylums.
Oh, of course, that's all they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And academies for gladiators.
Yeah, Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Excellent points, James. Thanks for calling and making them. Michael in Smithfield, North Carolina. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing? And good talking with you. And Tom, November election. This November election back in November the 4th. Republicans had control of the Wake County, which that's in Raleigh. Of all the Republicans had control of all the commissioner seats.
Mm-hmm.
And as of November 4th, all the Republicans in the commissioner seats in Wake County and Raleigh, you know, all over Wake County got voted out. And now there's a local state senator just outside of Wake County. His name is State Senator Chad Barefoot, and he wants to make it harder for Democrats to get in office by redrawing the commissioner district maps.
Hmm.
Wake County. Look up the Senate bill. It's called Senate Bill 181.
In North Carolina.
Yeah, Senate Bill 181. It was sponsored by Chad Barefoot. I wrote to Chad Barefoot yesterday. I let him know that please don't do that. Let the people vote. I got a response from him back, and he said, "Thank you, dear Michael. Thank you for letting us know your thoughts. Sincerely, Chad Barefoot."
Right, right. He blew you off.
I mean, why do they want to nitpick, you know, district maps all the time, Republicans?
Yeah.
I mean, because Republicans, they
because the only way Republicans can win is by manipulating elections.
They do, and the legislator, they do what they're told in Raleigh. Right. I mean, that's where the legislator is at. And two, were they talking about doing the Freedom Religious Act in North Carolina, too, House Bill 348.
Right.
What Indiana is doing. What is the deal? When is Republicans going to ever learn and grow up? And I thought they were put in office to create jobs and help people.
No, Republicans are put into office to defend the interests of big corporations and rich people, period.
Yep. Yeah,
and when you challenge them on that, then they resort to personal attacks and try to change the subject. And I mean, yeah, it's an old game. It's an old game. Michael, thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harmon here with you. Hack in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hey, Hack, what's up?
You know, it's tantamount to admitting you've lost the argument when you change the subject.
Yeah. yeah.
And you said earlier that what is it about having a penis that requires one to be president?
Yes.
Well, haven't you heard two heads are better than one?
Oh,
but on the flip side, you can think more clearly when you don't have competing heads.
There you go. Okay, so that's your explanation. All right, a few old jokes occur to me, but I'm not going to tell them. Say what? Yeah, you can't say that on the air. Okay, I didn't hear what Hack said. I'm sorry, but Shane is going to push the button. David, if anything Hack said offends anybody, my apologies. I don't know what it was, but David in Belen, New Mexico. Hey, David, what's up?
Hello, Tom. You know, the caller before who was changing the subject, I guess he never asked himself, did Mitt Romney ever sit down with Chinese Communist Party officials?
Yeah. I mean, it's not even that. I mean, answering that question is A, personal, and B, fairly complex. And it's just, you know, it's anyway, back to you, David.
It amazes me that, you know, the ignorance of these people and the one-sidedness, you know, and not willing to investigate all, you know,
Yeah, I just want to say for the record, I personally am very pleased that we are able to produce a television program every night out of the RT studios that's carried by both RT. We license it to both RT and Free Speech TV. That it is all of the content is produced by us. The employees who help write the show, Andrew and Nate are my employees. I write their paychecks. I cover their health insurance. I am paid by me. We get a license fee for the show not so much from Free Speech TV, but it's like by contract. I mean, we actually wrote into the contract that we have absolute editorial control, period, and there could be no interference with our program. It's an independent program, much like Larry King's program is. And just the fact that it's like if somebody's got a show on Al Jazeera, do you call up and say, hey, how much are you taking from from CNN? How much are you taking from ExxonMobil because they happen to be advertising this week? Or on MSNBC, how much are you taking from the fracking industry? It's a stupid question. Pardon me, David. Back to you.
It's
an offensive question, actually. It's not a stupid question. It's an offensive question.
Yes. I have a statement. I don't know if these people know that, I think Drill Baby Drill, when I first heard it, was I don't know what they're up to, but this is not about lowering gas prices for people. Okay. And Sinopec has bought two oil fields in Texas, and Chesapeake Oil had sold another, oil field in Oklahoma.
So the Chinese are buying up our oil fields now?
But yes, and they're Sinopec owned. That's a state owned company.
Right.
So, who runs that company? The chairman of the Communist Chinese Party.
Well, Communist Party's military, actually.
Yeah, right. And one of the other things that I just had a personal experience that if I did not falsify, now if government is so bad, this is my personal experience, is that I was told to falsify UL documents or I would be fired, and I was fired. Mm. And now they're saying we're going to mess with your, unemployment. And I'm going to fight it. But, geez, if companies do things so well, why do they have to hide, in the dark? TPP. And why do they have to threaten employees?
Because they're not doing things so well, David. These multinational corporations are out to screw the average working person. That's how they got so rich, and a lot of the billionaires behind them. So, yes, there are some good rich people out there who are willing to put their money into things that are actually going to cost them money, but that are going to make a better world. And God bless them, the people in the Democracy Alliance and whatnot. But it's like, so many of these billionaires and so much of this right-wing stuff is just coming out of really, really toxic places. I got to move along, David. Thank you for the call. Brian in Matthews, North Carolina. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Good afternoon, Professor. How are you?
I'm well. What's up?
I want to call regarding a couple of points. Regarding the Hillary Clinton misogyny angle, we're in for a bigger storm, just as you alluded to earlier in the program. It's going to come because, as I was telling Danielle, the Republicans think in their minds that they're sort of on a roll with the enactments that they've passed, the legislation and so on. And so they don't want her to derail it, in any way, shape, or form. They're on their way to whatever destiny they're trying to get to. So I really think they're going to come out all guns blazing to try to take her out early.
The Republicans, they've been doing it for years. I mean, as soon as they figured out that she was potentially going to run for president of the United States, the anti-Hillary stuff began, and it has been continuous for years.
Well, they've been biting their nails on that because they're great politicians, and you're not just getting Hillary; you're also going to get Bill in the White House, and they're afraid of that.
Yeah.
Because
Bill Clinton is one of the most, regardless of what you may think of his policies, and some of his policies I thought were brilliant and some of them I thought were really dumb. But regardless of what you think of his policies, he's one of the most brilliant politicians of the 20th century and now maybe the 21st century. And his wife may well be as brilliant as he is. We shall see. Brian, thank you for the call. Whew, what a day. We'll be back tomorrow. Don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require you to participate. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.